time we left off with the beginnings of this woman being described, the rebellious woman in some cases, or the seductress, various ways that it's put. But I want to try to go forth and just get a little bit of this read and then into the next one, and that will keep us in context of what's being said. She was loud and rebellious. Her feet would not stay at home. At times, she was outside, at times in the open square, lurking at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him with an impudent face. She said to him, "I have peace offerings with me. Today I have paid my vow. So I came out to meet you, diligently to seek your face, and I have found you. I have spread my bed with tapestries, colored coverings of Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love till morning. Let us delight ourselves with love. For my husband is not at home. He has gone a long journey and has taken a bag of money with him and will come home on the appointed day." With her enticing speech, she caused him to yield. With her flattering lips, she seduced him. We're going to go on from there about the effects of it here. But what do you notice about the way in which she expresses this or tries to get this young man to be one to fall with her in the matter of adultery or fornication? How does she make it look? All right. What all kinds of appeals are made? All right. The instant gratification there of one's desires or lusts are pointed out. It'll be sweet smelling, sweet looking. Everything will be great. There'll be all of this love there. That's not true. It's the word is lust for what she's looking for, not love. And so all of this has been pointed out. Notice what it says. My husband is not at home. He's gone on a long journey. He's taken a bag. The original word there, you would have a kind of a pocket purse. There's several different kinds, but they all go with the same kind of a name there from the Hebrew language. This is the word for a bag. In other words, it's not just a personal purse of money. He has a big old bag of money, and he's not going to come back. It has that rendered in the New King James, will not come home till the appointed day. The literal statement is, he'll not come home until the fullest of moon. And all that means is not at the full moon, but when that time is finished, he will go all the way to the complete end of that. When it's introduced by he has a whole bag of money, seemingly the idea is he'll come home after he's exhausted all of that money. So it'll be a long time. In other words, we won't get caught. What else do you notice about her?
Well, she first tries to make the case for how not so immoral she is.
Yeah.
Because she made her sacrifices.
Right. That's what we had noticed there last week. And again, yes, that's the point that is made. What else? Here's this statement down here. With her enticing speech, she caused him to yield. What was a part of that speech? Her flattering lips. She seduced him. This is several times that this has been brought up in the book of Proverbs. That kind of flattery, the seduction that's there with the voice of talking with these things. You know, it's very rare that people do not, or that people would get involved with one another in fornication or adultery without talking to some extent before. That's just virtually unheard of. And that kind of speech that leads there is the flattery, the kind of thing that builds it up. oh, I understand you better than your husband or your wife, or this, that, or the other kind of thing. The kind of enticement from there. The thing that keeps that from happening is if we make up our mind, I'm not going to talk about things like that with anybody but my spouse. There are subjects that should be off limits anywhere, but with our spouse and that spouse alone, nobody else should be involved in that. And that's one of the things that would have helped here had that been so with the man and the woman making that boundary that they failed to make. Anything else there? Let's go on as we talk about this then in verse 22. Immediately he went after her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stock, till an arrow struck his liver, as a bird hastens to the snare. He did not know it would cost his life. Now therefore, listen to me, my children. Pay attention to the words of my mouth. Do not let your heart turn aside to her way. Do not stray into her path. For she has cast down many wounded, and all who were slain by her were strong men. Her house is the way to hell, descending to the chambers of death. In that verse 22 there, where she talks about, or where they talk about, immediately he went after her, what are the comparisons that are given? He's gone to be what? Ox to the slaughter? What else? A fool to the stock of corrections. You've seen those, right? The stocks that they'd have somebody in, their neck out there and their arms through these things, and they'd have to stand there for all day long if they went down on their feet trying to sleep, or because they were tired, then many times they would break that upper arm as a result of it, because their weight would be upon that. That was the purpose of the stocks, was to be a place of punishment. Now, when he went into her house, is that what he was expecting? No, he is expecting things to be like she had talked about, with the flattering, with the wonderful things, all of this lust that would be fulfilled, and it would all be great. But instead, what happened is they were ones who got killed in the end. The liver being struck by the arrow, that was always seen as the death blow to someone in ancient times, because the liver was the heaviest of all of the organs, and it would have the most blood there. Pull that out and you were dead. And so that's the point. The arrow had been into the liver, the bird hastening to the snare, like it's trying to get caught. He did not know it would cost his life. That's what it in the end cost. When you look at all of those kind of statements, they go over the idea of how serious it is for one to go into fornication and adultery. It's something that we need to keep in mind. It's not something that's a mild thing with the very mild consequences to it. Not only a sin that causes us to be condemned before God, it's a sin that has serious consequences with it as well that we need to keep in our mind. And that last few phrases, or last few verses there, that she's cast down many that were wounded, all who were slain by her were what? Strong men. Who can it happen to? Anybody. And so we keep that in mind. This is not something just somebody that is weak might fall into. We recognize that's something that anyone might have. The wrong kind of a situation that we would get ourselves, we might all be those who were tempted in that way and succumb to it. Her house is the way of hell. Here again, the word is the word sheol, or death. It's not talking about the eternal Hades, or the eternal hell that would be spoken of in the New Testament. That's just the word sheol, or death. In other words, she leads you to death and descending into the chambers of death. It's not an upward kind of way. It isn't making things better. It's descending to the chamber of death. In other words, you're going into your grave, is what's happening when you involve yourself in this. Anybody got anything there? Anything on this? Go ahead, Eric.
It just makes me think, Harry, that we need to live our lives every day looking for these spider webs, so to speak, in a way that we don't get caught up in them. Because that's all this was. She came out to him and lied to him from the start. She said she sought him.
Yep.
She diligently sought him and she found him. That was a lie. That was just the next insect that landed in the web.
Right.
That's all that was. And then all of this, you know, what we're talking about, everything she did to make everything look so good and pleasing, all that enticement, we don't need, that's just, it's fake. If someone's trying to entice us, especially in a situation like that, we don't even know the person.
Yeah.
We got to put the brakes on and understand that's a spider's web right there.
Now, we've had several of these that have discuss this problem of fornication and adultery, of going into it, the consequences of it, the way in which it got there, various things like that. Let's think about it. How could we help someone with some suggestions to stay out of that problem? I know how they got into it. Now, how do we stay out of it?
Harry, we've already really talked about that, right? In the verses before, it's to look at our bride, look at the one that we have chosen, and the relationship that we have, and the love that we have together in Jesus Christ, and those positive things that keeps a marriage strong and together.
All right. Go ahead.
I'm not married, but the decision is made long before the opportunity arises. So go back to, I purpose in my heart. And I think the best way to avoid it is to avoid the opportunity of the situation.
Yeah. The Job 31, I made a covenant with my eyes, is something we need to remember, that concept. That this was something I made a covenant. I'm not going to do this. And the answer is not whether or how, but the answer no. Absolute no. That's not a question that's involved. And to make that a firm kind of a resolve in our mind. Go ahead, Jason.
Don't be impulsive with these desires that come on you like this. Qualify your actions and your behaviors. Look further to see what consequences might be part of that. Qualify what you do. Think about what you're doing before you just act out of impulse. Like Esau was probably really hungry. He was been out hunting and he had that hunger, but he gave up everything because of that moment of hunger.
The Hebrew letter equates that as a fornicator. That's the way he was, in that desire of the moment to have something to eat. Anything else? Go ahead.
Harry, back in verse 9, we talked about this a little bit last week. At twilight, as the day was fading, as the dark night set in, my grandmother used to always say, nothing good happens after midnight. And I think that's a really good reminder. And I think it's, a reminder to us, too. So many times we hear about these sport athletes and others. What do these things happen? 2, 3,
yeah.
4, o'clock in the morning. It's just, again, a good reminder. Where should we be? Home with our family.
Yeah.
Where are we all?
No, all right.
Common sense, not always calm. Right?
Watch where you go. We all know where the wrong parts of town are. And we don't have to stay away from there. When I go over into the Philippines, I've noticed the same thing. There'll be, you can spot it as you're coming into town on if you're on a right side of the town where you're going through it, they all look the same. You come through them in the day, and they look like nobody's around there. And you just say, okay, because the lights are strung up, kind of little bitty lights, but ones that will twinkle some and all that. You know where that side of town is. And when I talked with the young preachers over there, I said, you know where these places are. You don't go there. And I had one of them one time tell me, he says, well, sometimes I just drive by there. I said, figure out a different way. And everybody laughed and said, yeah, you don't need to go by there. That's the way those things are. You stay away. And maybe it's not that part of town in that particular manner of a brothel or something, but if it's something where we're with another person of the opposite sex, there are things that we know what it leads to, where it's where to go that would be private, or all of these things. Those kind of things are ones we need to stay away from and recognize that we battle that problem with fornication and adultery not at the moment that it could be participated in. We battle it way before, in the mind and in the opportunities to make sure we can't do it, period. We don't get in a situation like that. Go ahead, Lisa. Good communication there between a husband and wife will be very helpful in keeping that situation, as we talked about last time, being adultery-proof, which is what we need to work on. Anything else there? Okay, let's go to the questions from that particular one. Why is youth and not age the example of the simple in chapter 7? Old people want to say anything about that? Go ahead.
Well, I think you're more vulnerable to things that you don't have the understanding of the rest of them. I was talking to a young lady one time about things because she was the age of that sort of thing. And, you know, I tried to give her a little bit of wisdom on that. From the male, sometimes it's just wanting to use.
That age is where you find that knowledge that's applied becomes wisdom. You're going to generally find that with those who are older. They've got more of an opportunity for it. And so this, the simple, the one that hadn't learned these lessons, is given as that youth. The next one, what was the first mistake made by the youth that led to his ruin? All right. He knew where he was going, didn't he? And so he decided to go that way. And that was a mistake that then ended up compounding many times over. What identified the woman as a harlot?
Dress.
Do what?
Dress.
All right. The attire that is there of a harlot, it said. Using verses... excuse me. Using verses 11 to 13, give a brief character sketch of this woman. What was this seductress like? Do you remember some words used about her? All right, loud and rebellious. What else?
Enticing eyelids.
All right, enticing, flattered with her eyelids there, batting those eyes. What else? All right. What else? A deputy face. What, chapter 21, verse 29, use that same word in the way of a hardened face. In other words, someone who's been involved in that sin, they've gotten to that place of being somewhat hardened in it. It's not something where that shame is apparent with her. Go ahead.
PSD has, instead of rebellious, it says a crafty heart.
Okay.
Well, it says wayward, but I looked it up. And a crafty heart seems to me like someone who schemes, someone who's always working the angles, trying to manipulate people or scheme in some way.
All right. Go ahead, Larry.
She was very forward. She caught him and kissed
him. All right. Anything else? You ever notice several times she's referred to as the foreign woman? Wonder why. A foreign woman, what do you think her talking like? She got that accent? Maybe that French accent we had looked at or whatever there? It's seducing kind of a thing. That's so with every culture. I don't care what culture you're in, they always think somebody who is a foreigner has a more seducing kind of accent, that it's enticing to them. And that's just kind of the way it is across the board, wherever you're going to be. And that's what this is, a little bit of mystery that's different than what I'm used to. All right. Question 8. In verses 21 to 22a, what has happened in the heart of the youth? What happened to it?
He gave him.
Okay. He was one who was seduced, and he went, gave himself over. And what became of him when he gave in? He was slaughtered. It went to his ruin, is the point. Number 10, verses 26 and 27. The multitude who have committed adultery are viewed as being led to death. Are, quote, many, end quote, still led to death today by adultery? Explain your answer. Are there still many that are following that path? I think that's a pretty obvious answer, isn't it? That this is so more now than it has ever been. I think 2 years ago, it reached the top of the most divorces in the U.S. as far as per marriage, all of these kind of things. In other words, the divorce rate was at its highest. And then they said, well, it's starting to go down. I noticed in the paper today that there was another study that last year it was seen to go back up again. So it's not something that is in a general trend downwards, a general trend upward. Go ahead.
I would suggest that it's possible the reason why the divorce rate goes down is because people don't bother to get married.
This is true. This is true. That's why they counted against the marriages and see what the divorce rate there is. But that's very true that's... You know, used to, nobody would tell you that if they were living with somebody. I don't know how many times I've been out to a store, a hospital, wherever, you name it, and somebody will say, well, my boyfriend and I are living together, and da-da-da, or my girlfriend and I, we live such and such, and it just is not a big deal to them. They don't see it as a problem, and yet that shamefulness is something that ought to be recognized as totally against what God's order is. All right. Anything else there? Go ahead.
You mentioned divorce, but I think there's also a section of this where people even who consider themselves to be religious will go in search of some congregation or some group of people that accepts their divorce as scriptural.
Sadly so, and sadly some who have in some ways put forth the image of being even faithful Christians and yet are involved in that, in a kind of a secret life behind the scenes. Anything else there? Go ahead, Jason.
I didn't say earlier.
bring you to death in the end. All right. Let's get into chapter 8. And I want you to notice something here in chapter 8. Let's look at the first three verses. Does not wisdom cry out and understanding lift up her voice? She takes her stand on the top of the high hill beside the way where the paths meet. She cries out by the gates at the entry of the city and the entrance of the doors. Now, let me ask you something as we start this out. There is what do you call that? Personification, there we go. There's a personification that takes place here of wisdom. And which gender is it? Feminine gender. All right, now, before you ladies get up and want to say anything, that's not the reason I'm doing this. How many of you have had Jehovah's Witnesses come by and talk to you about Jesus being a created being? Usually they don't like to talk about that. You have to get them to do so. But have you ever talked with Jehovah's Witnesses about their view that Jesus is not deity? He was a created being. He's the greatest of all the angels. Anybody ever talk with them about that? All right.
Well, touched on it. That's about
okay.
When we first got into Texas, they came by and Brother John Iverson and Brother Jerry Ray. I don't know if you knew them, but they came over. We were young. We didn't really know how to do it. But it was a very interesting conversation, and it did get into that.
All right. This is the passage they will use if you get into a question about that. They'll say the one talking here is Jesus. And we're going to notice this as we go. I want to notice that error, but I also want to notice the truth. So let's keep the focus is, here's wisdom. Wisdom, the noun, is feminine. It's not saying that only women are wise or whatever the case. It's just that in the Hebrew language, wisdom is feminine in its gender. And so when that happens, that does not wisdom cry out. She takes her stand. She cries out by the gate. All right, now, let's see what wisdom being personified is going to say. Here's how wisdom would speak if it was a person. To you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of men. O you simple ones, understand prudence, and you fools, be of an understanding heart. Listen, for I will speak excellent things, and from the opening of my lips will come right things. From my mouth will speak truth. Wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are righteousness. Nothing crooked or perverse is in them. They are all plain to him who understands, and write to those who find knowledge. Receive my instruction, and not silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is better than rubies, and all the things one may desire cannot be compared with her. When you're going through this in the initial kind of a statement by wisdom, her point is this is better than anything else. This is what you need to be seeking. Now compare that, what have we just been talking about for the last couple of chapters? Who was enticing them? This foreign woman or this seductress, this adulteress that is out there, the harlot. She's seducing. Now here's wisdom in comparison to that. She was seducing people to do wrong and come ultimately to their death. She was flattering them, trying to get them to think that they were really somebody and build them up so she could get what she wanted from them. Is that what wisdom does? No, wisdom turns to a point and says, you want to listen to truth. You want to listen to that which is righteous. You want to listen to that which edifies and will build you up, will give you life, all of those things. All the words of my mouth are with righteousness. In other words, there isn't anything that goes aside from that. Here was a woman before who wanted to try to present herself as in some ways righteous because she had just taken her sacrifices after all. But that's not what this woman's like. This woman, everything about her is to be given to righteousness. Now, anybody got anything there? We've looked at a lot of this before. This is just the personification of wisdom speaking, what's already been told about wisdom. Now let's go on. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence. I'd underline that if I were you. If you're going to talk to somebody about this passage, what is it talking about? Who's speaking? I, wisdom, dwell with prudence and find out knowledge and discretion. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogance, the evil way, and the perverse mouth I hate. Counsel is mine and sound wisdom. I am understanding, I have strength. By me kings reign and rulers decree justice. By me princes rule and nobles, all the judges of the earth. I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently will find me. Riches and honor are with me, enduring riches and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, yes, than fine gold, and my revenue than choice silver. I traverse the way of righteousness and in the midst of the paths of justice, that I may cause those who love me to inherit wealth, that I may fill their treasures. Again, what do you get out of this? What's she saying about herself? What's wisdom calling attention to about herself? Do what? The value of her, that this is better than anything else. What else do you notice? How many times righteousness, all of these kind of words are put in there, virtue, these things that have to do with the matter of the riches of that righteousness and so forth. Now in verse 22, I'm going to go through this one and the next one together because they all work as kind of one long paragraph. The Lord possessed me at the beginning of His way, before His works of old. I have been established from everlasting, from the beginning, before there was ever an earth. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no fountains abounding with water, before the mountains were settled, before the hills, I was brought forth. While as yet He had not made the earth, the fields, or the primal dust of the world. When He prepared the heavens, I was there. When He drew a circle on the face of the deep. When He established the clouds above. When He strengthened the fountains of the deep. When He assigned to the sea its limits, so that the waters would not transgress His command. When He marked out the foundations of the earth. Then I was beside Him as a master craftsman, and I was daily His delight, rejoicing always before Him, rejoicing in His inhabited world, and my delight was with the sons of men. All right, let's go back to verse 22. The Lord possessed me. Do you have any other translations for that there in verse 22?
The Lord brought me forth.
Okay. There's one of the translations, and I've forgotten what it was, but it dealt with something a little bit more. If you look at the Jehovah's Witness translation, it'll say created, use the word created. It isn't even close to the word created, but that's not unusual for the Jehovah's Witness translation to be not a translation at all. But the idea is the Lord possessed me at the beginning, and then I was with Him. That would say that whoever this is not the Lord or deity, God, that's being spoken of. And that's what the Jehovah's Witnesses will claim. They'll go from verse 22 on down in this text, and they'll make that claim for this not being wisdom speaking, but this being Jesus. And if you catch them on that and say, wait a minute, The very start of this, it says wisdom is saying this. And then I wisdom, so forth and so on. And they'll go and they say, well, don't you think Jesus is wise? And I say, well, he's the very personification of wisdom that you're talking about. Well, again, well, let's stay with it in context. What does it say? Then I have to make Jesus Christ a she. Is that okay? Because that's what it says about this one that's speaking. It's a she. So if this is Jesus, then I've got to have a whole new way of looking things in the New Testament entirely. This isn't talking about Jesus. This isn't talking about him being created or him being alongside of the Father Creator. This is simply talking about wisdom was there from the very beginning. Now, why would that be so? Why would wisdom be there with God? Okay, he's the beginning of wisdom. That's what Proverbs 1 had talked about. That you don't have wisdom apart from God. And when you look at that idea of wisdom, that is one of the traits. It is not God, wisdom's not, but he possesses it. He's the one who is the very epitome of those kind of things. And so when you talk about light or holiness, when you talk about truth, God is the epitome of all of those. Does that mean that's what he is a quality of truth? Sometimes we'll have people say to us that you don't believe the Holy Spirit's a person. You talk about the Spirit and the Word being used synonymously. They are used synonymously several times. But the reason is not because the Holy Spirit is an inanimate Word. He's the one who spoke the Word. Same reason we'd say, you read Shakespeare. I don't read the person, the body, the flesh and or bones or whatever's left of him. When I read Shakespeare, I read what he wrote. And when you look at the Scripture, the Holy Spirit is the one who is behind. He inspired. He wrote the Bible in the ultimate sense of having brought it forth. Same thing with wisdom. Wisdom is not God, but wisdom is that which is possessed by God. And he is the very epitome of it. He shows it forth. That's why when he created, did he create in such a way that in any sense, in any place, manifest a lack of knowledge or wisdom? No. In everything God created and all that was there, he manifests wisdom and power and knowledge to know exactly how it needed to be. And to bring it all together in such a way that it had that kind of a show of absolute order that recognized this had to be one that was far greater than man to create this. What is that? Well, that's wisdom in that sense. So when you look at this, this is what is being talked about, this characteristic. Again, the she of wisdom was that which was a very characteristic that was there with God. Now, let me go on down. In verse 27, then, the second part of this that we looked at. When he, speaking of God, prepared the heavens, I, wisdom, was there. Correct? All right. Let me ask you something. In the New Testament, what do you see about who created what's talked about there of the heavens and the earth? John 1. All right. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God and was God. The New World Translation, so called by the Jehovah's Witnesses, has that being a God, and then they have a side note, or an angel. No, theos. It's the same thing. It's God. He was in the beginning with God. He was God. Verse 3, all things were created by him who? Him the Word, right? All things were created by him. Without him was not anything made that was made. So Jesus is not just one, as we know of him, the Word, the Son, as he is also called within the nature of the three who have that divine nature. He was the one who gave that word that spoke all things into existence, together with the Father, together with the Spirit. There was nothing that they did that could be talked about as something contrary to the other. Remember, as you look at deity, Father, Son, and Spirit, they are in absolute harmony. You look at the various passages of Scripture, John 17 and so forth, when Jesus is praying to the Father on the night before He's crucified. All of those things show an absolute unity that's there of Father, Son, and Spirit. All this is pointing out is that Father, Son, and Spirit all together possess the same qualities or same characteristics and showed those forth in the creation of the world. Anybody got anything there that you want to bring out? Go ahead.
So this personification of wisdom is not to be taken too far. This is not another entity, another being.
No.
It's just that.
It's a characteristic.
Everything that God did, nothing of it was unwise.
Right. Correct. And that's the whole point. When you get over to Romans 1, what's seen by the creation? The everlasting power and divinity of God are seen in the creation. The word divinity talks about the divine nature or His order, His wisdom, everything about Him. Omnipotence is everlasting power and that which has to do with His deity or His divinity has to do, I think, with the matters of His omniscience, His knowing of all, or having that total mind of knowledge and wisdom that could do it better than anyone possibly could. He's infinite in that quality. All right, anything else there? Anybody? Okay, let's go 32 to 36. Now therefore, listen to me, my children, for blessed are those who keep my ways, and hear my instruction and be wise, and do not disdain it. Blessed is the man who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the posts of my door. For whoever finds me finds life, and obtains favor from the Lord. But he who sins against me wrongs his own soul. All those who hate me love death. All right. When you have that statement that the children are to listen, blessed are those in the last part of verse 32 there, blessed are those who keep my ways. Why? Okay. All right. The one speaking is wisdom. So if we keep the ways of wisdom, that means we're also what? Wise. We're acting wisely. We're doing things that are the best. Where is that going to take us? Is that going to take us into sin and evil of some sort? No. Because wisdom never speaks glowingly or in a way that would suggest evil of any kind. Wisdom speaks against that kind of thing. And so what we need to understand is if we follow wisdom, then we're going to follow that path that is of righteousness. And then the talking that gets there in verse 33, hear instruction, that's the first step, and be wise. If I hear it first and then I'm wise, what does that mean? I apply it to the situation that I'm finding. Now what? Do not disdain it. If I'm not going to go and think about it and how to act wisely, then what am I going to do? I'm going to just discount that wisdom. Think it's not worth anything. Disdain it. Push it to the side. Is it always easier to learn how to be wise than to just be a fool? No. It's harder. But that's why I need to listen to that instruction and learn, recognize what that better way is, and then don't hate the wisdom, love that wisdom, and be ready to follow that, do what's right. When you listen to me, he says, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the post of my doors. In other words, you be there always together with me, ready to be used at any place, at any time. For whoever finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. If you'll give yourself to wisdom, you'll come to the way that's right before God. Because ultimately, that is the very definition of wisdom. That which has to do with righteousness and goodness before God. Any other way, anything that leads to the way of the devil is a way of folly. All right, now, that last little statement, that he who sins against me wrongs his own soul. In other words, we do it to our own detriment. When you look at a sinner and one stayed in sin and having the opportunity to get out of it and going back into it one time after another, what are they doing? They're harming themselves. That's the point. The sinner is his own worst enemy. Others were ready for him to come out of that. They're trying for him to. If that one comes out of it, they're ready to accept him, to help him, forgive him. All of those things make us and them better together. But when one goes back into sin repeatedly, they're their own worst enemy. It's the thing that's going to lead to their own destruction. All right, anything there?
I think that the phrase that we hear sometimes in the world, ignorance is bliss. And I think Proverbs 8 is a good place to go that shows there is nothing that deals with happiness and ignorance.
Yeah.
There's nothing blissful about that whatsoever. And the way to happiness and life and to the Father is only found through wisdom of the Father.
All right. Anything else there? Okay, we're going to have a closing word of prayer. Kevin Riddell, if you'll lead us, and then we'll... Oh, that's true.